Hey there, and welcome back to Take One, the podcast that brings you just one luminous page of Talmud each day. And today, we read Bava Metzia 53, 54, 55. But if you're hearing this on the day it is released, it is Erev Leil HaSeder. It is the day of Passover, and we couldn't let that just slide. It is time, I think, for a brief conversation about Pesach and liberation and what it means. And it gives me great pleasure to welcome to the show Rabbi Jeff Salkin, the author of an incredible new book, Tikkun Ha'am. Rabbi, thank you so much for being our guest.
Thanks, Leo. It's great to be with you.
And so first of all, give us a little vort about Passover, about this meaning. Is this merely a journey of national liberation, or should we sit down at the table tonight and also consider this a, you know, personal exodus of sorts?
You know, the great thing about Yitzhak Mitzrayim, about the exodus from Egypt, is that we can understand it in a historical, literal way. It's about the departure of the Jewish people from Egypt, which creates the Jewish people as a people. We can actually look at it as a psychological story about how all of us are enslaved by our own Egypt. And by the way, in Hasidic sources, I think that's a very popular theme. I want to go one step further, though. I want to go to a text. The text that I would share with you and your listeners is one that we all know, and it's in the Haggadah itself. But kol dor vador, in every generation, chayav adam lirot et atzmo, a person, a descendant of Adam and Eve, must see himself, herself, themselves, ki ilu hu yatzam mimisraim, as if they had gotten out of Egypt. And what I've always been struck by, and I invite you and your listeners to focus on this, is that it could have said Chayav Yehudi, a Jew is obligated, Chayav Ben or Bat Yisrael, a member of the Jewish people is obligated, but it deliberately says Chayav Adam, the human being, must see himself or herself as if they had gotten personally out of Egypt. And for me, this is a great, as we say, pitchon peh. This opens the mouth, pitchon neshama. It opens the soul to a serious accounting for, are we allowing other people into our story? And how do we open the gates of our story to other people?
Sorry. So this is a very good segue to talk about something that I've been meaning to ask you because it's been on my mind. You know, there's a tradition on Passover sometimes to put other objects that were not prescribed on the Seder plate to remind us of other things that are going on in the world, other Egypts that may be enslaving us. I personally found myself reflecting in the aftermath of October 7th about the suffering of other people, especially the ongoing genocide in Artsakh of the Armenian minority in the sliver of land also referred to as Nagorno-Karabakh, currently under siege and suffering tremendous hardship and starvation. And it seemed to me that taking a moment, precisely when your own people were suffering so greatly, and reflecting on another people's suffering, and remembering that we are not fighting distinct individual wars, but rather, in a sense, a universal, eternal war against evil, against oppression, against tyranny, and that we are together. Taking a moment, in other words, to remember the Armenian people in this moment is kind of a almost wonderful course correction, which is why I wonder whether or not we should put, say, an apricot, kind of a great symbol of the Armenian people, on the Passover plate. Is this a wild thought?
Not at all. Listen, I think that the plate actually is interesting to me because as I hear you describe it, it helps me understand something about the ritual itself. There is no canonical, as it were, Haggadah. Now, there's a traditional text of the Haggadah, but it has always been amplified throughout history, both by artwork and by other texts as well. It's fluid. It's a loose-leaf notebook. And the symbol of the fluidity, the inclusiveness really is the Seder plate that, you know, I joke that sometimes it feels like it's getting weighted down with other fruits and vegetables and their imagery. But that has been the place where we allow people into our story. Because if this story is only one that we tell ourselves, then I'm speaking now as a child of of classical Reform Judaism, we lose the ability to be an Or LaGoyim, to be a light to the nations. We lose the ability to tell our story and to allow other people to feel that they're part of it. That's a big price to pay for privacy and for personalism. So yes, I think we need to allow the Armenians into our story, because I'll tell you something. You and I have conversed about this. I've always felt that there is a resonance between our stories. I think actually, I'm going to tell you something really interesting. I could be wrong. I think that the Armenians are the only other group in the Western world. I am pitifully ignorant about other cultures, wherein there is a singular national identity and a religious identity. I'm not sure there are Jewish Armenians. In other words,
there are, thankfully.
Wow, really?
Yeah, minority.
Okay, but the point is that there is a resonance here. Number two, I've also written about this. Armenian theologians had the same kinds of questions that Jewish theologians had. The Armenian theologians wrote about, where was God in Armenian suffering? Were we punished? How could this have happened to us? We were the first nation to accept Christianity, and this is what we get. And those are parallel questions to what Jewish thinkers were asking after the Shoah. So I do think our souls beat together in rhythm and in synchronicity with each other.
So let's hope that as we sit down to the Seder tonight, whether we think of the Armenians in Artsakh or about any other group undergoing hardship and suffering, let us hope, Rabbi Shulkin, that we remember the wisdom of your teaching just now, and remember that it says Chayav Adam. It's about all of humanity and not just us. It is precisely, as you said so beautifully, by letting other people into our story that our story becomes the resonant eternal truth that it is. Rabbi Jeff Shulkin, thank you so much for being our
guest.
This has been Take One. If you enjoy the show, and I hope that you do, then you are really going to love the new book just published by me. It's called How the Talmud Can Change Your Life, Surprisingly Modern Advice from a Very Old Book. You can order it now at your local bookstore or directly from the publisher through the link in this here podcast description or through that big online store whose logo is, you know, a smile. As always, please go rate and review Take One on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. You could get your Take One t-shirts and mugs and other swag at tabletstudios.com, and you could subscribe to our weekly newsletter at tabletm.ag/Take One Newsletter. Take One is a Tablet Studios production. The show is hosted by me, Leah Leibowitz, and is produced and edited by Josh Cross, Robert Scaramucci, Quinn Waller, and Ellie Blyer. Our team also includes Stephanie Butney, Courtney Hazlett, and Tanya Singer. For more information, go to tabletmag.com/takeone or email us at takeone@tabletmag.com. I hope we have made your day a little more Talmudic.